Okay, thanks y'all for coming. I'm super excited that we're all able to be here at our panel about how to talk to your audience about climate. My name is Julia Gettner. I'm actually taking place of Wawa Gatheru, who is supposed to be initially facilitating this panel, but she's not able to be here with us, so you're stuck with me. But yeah, so I am the co-founder of Bad Activist Collective. So we are a collective of activists, artists, and organizers that are really working to do a lot of things. One of them is kind of dismantling this idea of perfectionism within activist spaces, and then really thinking about how we can connect along the lines of climate justice and the ways that it intersects with everything in the world, really have an expansive understanding of justice issues to create spaces where we're learning from each other, where we're centering like joy and healing, and where we're fighting for a better future for the people and the planet. So we work closely with Climate Control Projects, which is a company that's really kind of working on creating connections between artists and audience around climate. So things like this are really awesome examples of ways that we're bringing kind of like activists, artists, and just like folks that are super excited to engage together. So CCP is putting on a 3-day climate music concert. Music concert, all concerts are music concerts, that is called the Blade Climate Thing in New York. And so this is gonna be in September, right before New York Climate Week, which is gonna be a great opportunity to really kind of connect and engage around the intersections of music and climate. So, you know, Climate Control Projects is also doing really cool things within the industry to think about how does the music industry really become a more sustainable and a champion for kind of tackling the climate crisis. So they are researching R&D across everything alongside with touring and other kind of climate music industry issues, as well as creating other kind of ways that folks are connecting. One of them is through an app that's really hoping to foster kind of connections between artists, audiences, organizers, and just kind of community folks. So yeah, so we're super excited to all be here and chatting about this. So I figured the best way to kind of start is just if everyone can introduce yourself as well as kind of like how you got started thinking about the intersection of music and climate and also social justice.
All right. My name is Malin Pettersen. I am from Norway, Oslo. And I am an artist, songwriter, and I've always been trying to be aware of being a voice that kind of counters the consumerism out there. But through COVID, I got really aware of how affected I was when listening to music or seeing artists talk about things that were important to them, or also on the other end of things, artists that were like pushing for like buy new stuff or like do this or that, that I was being really affected by. So I thought, maybe that means that I can also affect people somehow. And that got me started on thinking about how I could do that in a better way than I was doing it.
Hi, my name is Ioni. I'm also a musician. And I started thinking about social activism and climate change a little bit more recently. I'd say in the start of the pandemic or on the times of like the Black Lives Matter movement, and also just like this idea of COVID and capitalism and the way that we really had to interact with this in a very, you know, confront it in a very personal way in all of our lives, and especially in the music industry. So for me, that kind of pushed me to start thinking about using activism in my music and in the ways that I write songs, and kind of pivoting from making music that was a little less intentional to creating music with the intention of creating conversation and using it as a means to incite action and incite, you know, a little bit more change and a little bit more intentionality. So that's been something I've been working on since I've released a couple singles about, first Unmoved, A Black Woman Truth, about my experience as a black woman. And then more recently, January of last year, The Patriots, which was more of an exploration of capitalism and racism and social justice, specifically with the perspective of America, the United States of America, kind of as my case study. So yeah, those are things that I've been really passionate about and have kind of begun this idea of how can I use my music to confront more things that I experience in my life.
Hi everyone, I'm Tori Choi. I'm from Hong Kong, but I'm based in the UK and I'm one of the co-founders of Bad Activist Collective. So, you know, based on what Julia says, a lot of what we do is try to dismantle the guise of perfectionism in activist spaces, but also strive for accountability. And basically how that applies to some of the work that I've done. I've been an organizer in the climate justice movement for a while now, and I think that it got to a point where I started thinking more about how it's impossible to pry apart different justice issues when talking about the climate crisis, but I felt like the spaces that I was in weren't nuanced enough or weren't appreciating the intersections of different issues. And I also think that with that, we have to understand that individualism in the climate space is something that's really hammered in to the point where people are too afraid to take action. And that's not to say that folks don't have the capacity to influence things as individuals, but you know, when you start thinking about the fact that it's something ridiculous, like 71 companies are responsible for 100 companies that are responsible for 71% of emissions, that's when you start really realizing that this is a systemic issue, and the focus on individualism is essentially a way to derail the movement without tackling kind of the issues at its core. So that's what I'm about.
Awesome. So I figured we could start with a little bit of framing, just kind of like, what are we actually talking about when we're talking about climate justice? So Tori, do you want to kind of kick us off for that?
Yeah, so the best way that I kind of want to describe climate justice is I think about it as not only a framework, but also a movement of individuals who recognize, again, that the climate crisis has deep roots in systems of oppression. You cannot talk about climate justice without talking about racial justice, without talking about gender equality, without talking about disability justice, and all of these different justice issues that are inherently intersecting. And when I say intersecting, I mean you can't pry them apart, because I think intersectionality gets thrown around a lot like a buzzword, without actually recognizing that you cannot pry these systems of oppression apart. And within the climate justice movement, people are guided by that framework and as a result try to find solutions that are not only, you know, slowing down the crisis, but making sure that folks who are on the front lines, marginalized communities, are the ones that we center. And with that being said, we have to recognize that, for instance, those who are experiencing the brunt of the climate crisis are not the ones who are perpetuating it. And I think that's really inherent to the way that, you know, we are guided by our work, but also the way that I think we're gonna actually tackle the crisis, because we're thinking about it from all different angles and we're centering folks who I believe have been living most sustainably and actually by definition are sustainable. So yeah, everything to me comes back to climate justice.
Awesome. So the panel today, we're really talking about talking to our audiences about climate. So wanted to kind of start with a little bit more framing of like, what or who do you think is your audience and what exactly are you trying to say to them? I don't know if we want to just like go this way, make it a circle.
Yeah. I think my audience is a pretty, well, I make country music. And I started out in my dad's band, which means my audience started out as white men in their 50s. And now it's getting to be more women, younger, and I am trying to speak to both of those audiences at the same time and trying to push people to be aware of the change that they can make in their everyday lives and also push ideas that they might not come across in their everyday life. And I try to do that both through being very literal, like posting facts And whenever I come across like numbers or people actually making, like having projects that they can be a part of, but I also try to just the way that I am on social media or the music that I make, have that be a counterpart to whatever they might listen to or whatever they might see in their like Instagram or the other music that they listen to, so that I can kind of in between the lines like present my way of thinking and hopefully spark some thoughts and ideas in their minds and maybe make them choose differently and maybe make them see the structural changes that need to happen and be a part of a community that talks about that as well and kind of get more people on that same line of thought.
I think my community with the kind of music that I make, I want it to be the world. And I think I'm born in Barbados, in the Caribbean, in the West Indies. So I think from a young age, like seeing the geographical impact of colonization on the islands and the way they can handle rain and, you know, moving around. I lived in Singapore and Jakarta, as well as California, and have been able to kind of see the way that education, when it relates to whether it's waste management in Jakarta or like the resources that certain countries have to interact with their geography, to interact with the impacts of climate change. I think for me at a young age, being able to explore different places, I've wanted to make music that could affect as wide of an audience as possible. And I also love pop music. I feel like that's kind of the music that I make. So wanting to relate to young, to old, to women, to men, to trans, to, you know, people of different walks of life, and be able to have my music impact and resonate and to be able to use that to address the experiences that I've had, which haven't been as singular or haven't been as tied to a certain location, has inherently kind of changed the way that I communicate and wanting it to resonate with as many people as possible.
Yeah, I would love to think that, you know, I have the scope to kind of reach all walks of life, but I also recognize that perhaps some of the niches that I have in my life are where I'm more likely to make impact. But that being said, as an activist, I'm extremely transient. I think that every year I'm a different type of activist, and I think I'm continually improving and changing and, you know, learning more and more. So my audience would be those who kind of come along for the ride, who are, you know, at different stages of my journey. And I would like to think that through Bad Activists, a lot of these folks are people who care, but they don't really know where to place that care, or they don't feel like they have a voice in it. Because I think that generally speaking in the climate movement, we see the same people a lot of the time. And there are so many more people who could be activated to take action and who really do care about the planet, but don't feel equipped enough to talk about it or feel like they're set up to fail by virtue of the fact that we expect perfectionism from people in this movement. So yeah, my audience is transient, much like me.
I also want to say that my audience, I hope I can make it as broad as possible. I'm just trying to, you know, see who I know that I'm reaching, and but also wanting to show that the kind of music that I make that has been associated with a certain kind of person, knowing how that music was made and what history lies there, I want to also talk about that and make it more accessible for all kinds of people. And that's also truly my goal. So I was talking more about who I know used to listen to my music and now trying to really, really broaden the scope and try to open it up to more people.
Yeah, I love that, especially because music has this way to be a cross-cultural lens. So I feel like there's so much, it's like, okay, I have an audience, but like it can be expansive in that way.
Definitely.
So Ioni, something I wanted to ask you is a little bit like, in what ways do you see the role of music in creating change, and kind of like, how do you see yourself positioning within that larger framework?
Awesome. So I think when I think about music, I like to go to the pre-capitalism, you know, before there was a dollar to be made off of it. Music was really used to unite communities, whether it was celebration, whether it was worship, whether it was a call to action. Like, music and like rhythm specifically as a Black woman, like the impact of music has really been to me, it's like one of the most powerful mediums we have in this world, to be honest. Like, even if, you know, even in places where I didn't speak the language of the community, it's like I can still sing a song and it can still be felt. So when I think about the impact of music, I personally am like most inspired by music. Even when I think of protest music, of Nina Simone, of Aretha Franklin, of Marvin Gaye, like that's the way that I feel like music can definitely be used to encourage, to uplift. And I think like as a Black woman as well, and like growing up in America and thinking about the way that music has been able to encourage the Black community and to give us confidence through different seasons and different times in this country's history, I think that when I think about climate change and the ability to start conversations as a musician, of course I'm biased, but I'm like, that's the first place I want to start. How can I write songs that, you know, I have songs I'm working on that are super pop, but it's like the topic of them is climate change. And if you dig into the lyrics, it might catch your ear at first, but like the further you delve into it, you can still find a message there that speaks to you and encourages you. So I think that music to me is a medium that can definitely be utilized. And I feel like lately in the music industry, it's been a little bit more difficult for protest music or for music with intention to reach the forefront because, you know, the people who are investing in what gets to be told and what stories get to be centered, it's not as profitable, you know? It's literally not as profitable to speak truth in your music or to choose to tell stories that are not easily entertainable, that demand a little bit more of you as an audience member or of you as a listener. But I think that there is a changing tide, and I think that with every big social moment, music or art tends to play a really big part in encouraging people and showing them, you know, the path forward. So I think that as an artist, my job isn't to be the leader, but it is my job to like open up conversation and to figure out what do we need to be talking about right now socially, and how can I create music that simply makes people want to have those conversations, not to look to me for the answer, you know?
I love that. And I think that like creativity is like such an amazing tool for like radical change. I also work with like a lot of visual artists, and we talk a lot about like artists across all mediums have been like interpreting the world and offering like alternative visions. They've been like pushing forward like revolutionary radical change. They've been like offering information in ways that are accessible to people in so many different formats. And I think that like every movement, every revolution, like every way that we're looking to build a new world, like creativity that's not commodified is like the center point of that. And that's like kind of what we want to be seeing and driving forward. So something that I'm kind of interested in connecting with that, Tori, is that we, I feel like, as activists and organizers, talk a lot about like how everyone has a role in the movement, and that there's not like one way, like an activist versus non-activist binary. So I'm wondering kind of like your thoughts on a little bit of those roles in the movement, and then also like what's the role of music, which is a multi-billion dollar industry, like what's that role in the movement as well?
Yeah, I love that question because it's something that I think about every day, and I genuinely believe that everyone has a different role. And I think, again, you know, going back to this idea of perfectionism and this homogenization of how people are told to be activists can be very damaging because not everyone is going to fit one size, you know? And I also think that a lot of it has to do with capitalism and trying to shoehorn us into these sorts of roles that are perhaps seen as more valuable than others, but the reality of it is, when I think about roles in the climate movement, I'm thinking about the healers who create space for me to breathe and who give me the, you know, the clarity to do this work in the long term. I think about people who literally make me cups of tea when we're in organizing spaces. I think about the folks who are creative, making music and touching into audiences that I know I'll never really be able to have that impact in. And I think about people who work behind the scenes, who are literally making the sort of logistics of organizing run. So, you know, I really don't believe that everyone has to be the same. And in fact, I think that if we embrace our individuality over our individualism in these movements, that's how we can really start to see change on a more systemic and widespread level. Because otherwise, you know, if everyone's trying to fit into this one role, we're just going to have the same homogenous answers to a climate crisis, which is so inherently complex. And we're also not going to be centering folks who have the lived experience and the realities of being on the front lines. You know, I always say to people that the face of the climate movement a lot of the time is very Eurocentric. We have Greta spearheaded time and time again, and she's a fantastic organizer and activist. But what message does that send to folks who have been doing this campaigning since the day they were born? What does that say to folks who literally didn't have a choice to become an activist or not? You know, it was in their blood, so to speak. And it also puts a lot of emphasis on one person to be the solution, which is incredibly damaging, not only for the person in question, but for the expectations for those, you know, to live up to that reality. And, you know, I mentioned Greta, and time and time again, we see people trying to derail the work of climate activists by being like, well, you flew, you didn't sail, you used a plastic bottle, you know, all of these things that are so systemic. And that's not to say that we don't have a role in accountability and acknowledging the realities of our individual action, but just that it's so much more nuanced than anyone can ever pin down into a black and white situation. So for me, I think that having multiple roles in the climate movement is not only necessary for creating solutions, but also for preserving our sanity and trying to continue this work in the long term.
And then, okay, so I'm gonna pitch this out to like everyone a little bit, is just kind of thinking about the music industry as an industry, both for folks who are within the industry and maybe from an outside perspective, like how do we see moving forward with the music industry in utilizing that, or maybe the pitfalls and the downfalls of how we can kind of address both climate and social justice?
It's a big topic.
It is.
I sincerely think, at least, that the more people who talk about this and who ask questions in meetings, who, when they are booked to a festival, try to like be aware of what kind of festival it is, what their lineup is like, try to be aware of like the different ways that they can like work to make things more sustainable in like every aspect of the thing, and like talk to the people who book for them and let them know, like, I would like to try to not, to make it very specific, like try to not fly that much. That's like a very specific thing, but if the whole industry at every level starts waking up, then I think it'll be easier to drive change. But there needs to be accountability at some point, and there needs to be actual questions being asked, and also seeing that it works, that the different alternatives actually are there, and that we can make it work if we just do it.
I quickly want to like actually touch on something that Ione said, which was thinking about how, you know, this industry has been so shaped by capital, and like the worth that is placed on artists on the basis of whether they can sell records or shows is actually part of the problem as well in tackling this. Because, you know, if we're not centering people on the planet, it's always going to be about profits first. It's going to be like, oh, well, you know, should the music industry be accountable because, oh, it's going to cost us a lot of money. And I think that inherent sort of value is what's stopping a lot of people from taking action. So I'd love to hear more about your thoughts on this.
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer can lie, you know, in this idea of profit and like who gets to profit off of art, you know? And I think for artists, there is a way to partner with your community, you know? And it's like, I like the idea of like master ownership. And like, if you can retain your masters and you're putting out music and, you know, you're putting out a song that's about climate change, maybe some of the profits can go to a community garden, and like your community can run those streams up in profit. You know what I mean? Like, I think there's a way that cutting out the middleman and bringing music back to community, where when I make this song for you to lift you up, it lifts you up too. You know, and it's like, how can we get money flowing in the right directions? Because I think a lot of the time it's very easy to be like, you know, the problem is labels and the problem is, you know, the people at the top, but it's like, you can still make a change, you know what I mean? Like, you can still look into your community and figure out how can my art bring all of us up, you know? And it's not, I think it's also important to recognize the mental health that comes with that for artists and feeling like, you know, sometimes you have the world on your shoulders and it's like, you don't need to be a savior, but I think you can play your role, you know? And I think if there are needs in your community, there is a way moving forward for artists to just directly connect, you know? And I think to me, I'm always figuring out, well, how can we cut out the middleman? Like, how can we bring art back to a place where it's simply about the human experience, you know? It's simply about creating music about life, and it's like, if your inspiration is your lived experience, I think there are still ways that, like, as you eat and you grow because people in your community support you, you grow because people in the world want to listen to your music and want to go to your shows and want to buy your merch. So how can you turn around and make sure that, like, those same people supporting you are getting a piece of your pie? Because I feel like you can grow together in that way, and, you know, it doesn't solve everything, but it's like, to me, artists, it's like we are at the disposal of our communities. Like, it's an act of service to write songs, it's an act of service to sing and to tell stories, and it's like, it's not about, at least in my experience, I don't believe that my gifts or my crafts have anything to do with me. You know, it's like a gift. It's something that I actually have to go out and share with the world. So I think you can take things a little bit further and figure out, okay, well, I want to do this single and maybe it's about police brutality. Like, what organizations can I make sure I cut some of my check to, you know? And there's ways that it's not going to change anything overnight, but you can feel like you're doing your part and that as you continue to grow, it's proportional, you know?
I just want to touch again on, like, the framework of bad activism, because, you know, I've spoken to a few folks who are either in the music biz or in the entertainment biz, and a lot of them keep saying that they're too afraid to speak up for fear of taking up too much space and also for fear of getting things wrong, and they don't feel like they're equipped to talk about that. And I think that's where the sort of bad activist framework of, like, you're not perfect, we live in an inherently imperfect world, is a really great way to encourage people to at least take some steps. It's better than doing nothing. But at the same time, by just being in this space, so many of us are cognizant of our movements and the messages that we have being co-opted and turned into for-profit machines that essentially lead to the exploitation of people who have lived, breathed, and, you know, organized their whole lives. So for me, it's this very fine balance, again, where we're like, okay, you don't have to be perfect, but you have to be accountable. And you're, you know, Julia and I often talk about things being inherently radical, and radical means at the root. And a lot of people have this misconception of radical automatically means violent anarchy, which for a lot of people it does, but to us it means addressing things at the root and recognizing that if you're going to be talking about the climate crisis, we have to tackle it in a very, very sort of inherent root of understanding that it comes from systemic oppression, and that the climate crisis has resulted because of years of colonization and exploitation and, you know, neoliberal capitalism. So for me, you know, I think there is possibility for folks to be more vocal in the space, but also there is this accountability to recognize that it has a very diverse basis.
And also, I think in the music industry, because of all of that, the artist have been at the mercy of the industry for such a long time, like trying to get a record deal, trying to get a booking agent, trying to get people to work with you. So you're always just like, I'll take the deal. Great. Awesome. But to, like, actually think about the fact that we can make a community, like, we can go out and find people who want the change that we want and work with those people, and that way, like, grow a more healthy industry. And I think that's a really, I feel empowered by doing that. Yeah.
No, I think it's really interesting what you say, actually, because I remember when I put out my first song that was about social activism, Unmoved, and I was sick before it came out, honestly. I was like, this could ruin my career. Like, I was like, this is so direct, and this is so, there's no going back from this, you know? And, like, but I think it literally blew the door open in such a beautiful way, because there are people who are yearning to hear music that is about what they're living through. And it's like, we're living in this moment of escapism where music and art is just like, I just want to have a good time. I just want to, you know, forget what's going on when I step out this door. And there's a space for that. But I think there's also a space to like reflect the times. That's what we're kind of called to do in a lot of ways. So I feel like for me, you know, I think it's important to also acknowledge like, yeah, there are things that you can lose from speaking your truth. There are people who might be like, we don't want to take that artist, you know, she talks too much or whatever, but it's like, trust that you'll find your people and trust that by speaking truth to power, you're creating a space that might not yet be there, but you got to step out on faith and trust that people will see you being authentic and show up for you.
And for me, the reason I dared to do that was because I saw other artists do it. And so thus, trusting that maybe me doing it as well is like contributing to a good change. And like, I remember coming from country music, which in Norway, people think is a white genre. And then it's not, and I know that. And just trying to communicate that and try to be a part of that change and trying to do that with every aspect of like things that I work with, it just, I think every tiny little change that can help us all feel more like a community will help push all, like you talked about, like how everything is connected. So everything you push is going to make a difference because we're all going to feel more like a force.
If you haven't read Emergent Strategies by Adrienne Marie Brown, this is the time to get that book because that is a very good sort of way to, you know, coalesce everything that you just said.
And it's interesting because as I'm hearing this, I'm thinking a lot about this idea of kind of like social reproduction of systems of oppression, right? So we have like this understanding, or I hope we can reach this understanding, right, that the climate crisis is caused by like colonialism, white supremacy, and capitalism, and how those seep down into everything we do, into the industries like the music industry, and into like the ways that we relate with our community, relate with other people. How do we talk about like audiences as consumers versus like community? And I truly believe that the way to combat that is through connection. It is through community. It's through undoing those relationships you have to yourself, to your friends, to your family, to your coworkers and your workspace, to like your larger communities. And people are like dying for that. As you see, like people want to latch on because that's like the things that drive change, that drive like us to be able to envision a world belong like past the dumpster fire that is currently happening. And so as we're thinking about this kind of like community building stuff, we've touched a little bit about it, but it's like, I'm wondering what your all's thoughts process on is like specifically on artist engagement. And it is like, this is something that Climate Control Projects is really trying to focus on, is like how artists engage with their communities around climate. And where have you been like so far in that journey? And like, where do you see kind of going towards in the future? Both of you can answer.
I did this thing. I went on tour in November and I wanted to do something that would kind of put focus on sustainability and climate change. And what I did was I started this thing where in every city that I went to, like months in advance, I started posting about it in social media saying, hey, we're coming to Bergen, which is a Norwegian city. What's the best like local sustainable store or production facility or people making stuff in that city that people in that city should know of, but that also people in the whole country should know of? And I would get tips about or suggestions, and then I would ask one local store or person making stuff to come to my show and sell their merch or talk about their business. We had everything from like people making clothes, people fixing bikes, communities for like mental health, lots of different things. Just have them come to the shows and post about it in social media, just to make people aware of the fact that you don't have to. You don't have to like buy stuff off of the internet and have it shipped all the way. Like we have lots of things right at our doorstep, and maybe our neighbor who we never talked to before, maybe they actually like make incredible jam or music, or like maybe they're like maybe that's a person I should know who is. Maybe we have the same interests and could be friends. And it was a really cool thing, and people really responded
so cute
to
in Norwegian
it well.
Too.
Yeah. It was a great thing, and that's a thing that I want to keep doing just because it's a pretty easy thing for me to do, and it just really makes me feel like I'm a part of a community, and it makes me meet, like I learned so much about every aspect of what we've been talking about, which made me want to do more, and which just made it feel easier and not be so afraid of making mistakes. Not feeling like I have to be perfect, but just that I'm a part of a continuous line of people trying to like push it in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, I think for myself, the art is the first place where I like to look, where I'm like, okay, like if this is something, I like to lead with my lived experience because I never want to feel like I'm just trying to write about something to write about it. Like, so once I feel impacted by something, I like to think like, okay, how could I curate a storytelling of this topic or of this experience that brings as many people in as possible without neglecting the truth or without costing the truth. But I think beyond that, as I get into my career and hopefully do my first tours and do things like that, I see artists like Billie Eilish, you know, encouraging her fans to like bring water bottles to shows and things like that, where on a smaller level, it's like you're still interacting with your audience. And then there's another group, Amber Jean, I think it's a jazz group. I can't remember their name now, but they're very big. but at their shows, they encouraged different activist organizations to set up tents outside next to their merch and to encourage people to take a second when they're looking at merch and stop and talk to people and check it out. And like, to me, those are things that once I have the opportunity to do that in my career, I think there are meaningful ways to create space for those conversations. And also, as I talked about earlier, proceeds of music. If I'm writing about a certain topic, like with Unmoved, a Black Woman Truth, I put the proceeds towards that, towards Blackpink, a trans organization for people in prison, to help them have more support and more supplies and stuff like that in their lives. And I feel like I don't ever want to feel like I'm making money off of, you know what I mean? Yeah. Something that is hard or something that is unfair or something that is still not healed or not fixed. So finding ways to speak about topics, but to make sure that the more the conversation opens up, the more there is an intention for the right community to profit off of that and the right community to get support out of the things that they still need, and finding a way to just consider things. And I think, like we spoke about earlier, you know, sometimes people are like, I don't know where to begin, I'm not even gonna bother, but I think you just have to try. You know, at the end of the day, like, you will get it wrong, you know, and people will tell you, this isn't right it, or your intention might have been pure, but it didn't really resonate the way that you hoped that it would. But I think we literally just have to try, you know? Like, what can I do? Is there something I can do? Can I lend my voice to this protest? Can I? There's so many different options that we have, and I don't think you have to pick one and stick with it. See who calls you and see where you are called, and just find ways to like use your gift and your craft to uplift someone, you know?
It's something I wanted to kind of add in that it's just like, what I'm hearing both of you say is just like the necessity for like collectivity, right? And that's something that we talk about all the time, is kind of like this idea of coalition building, is that it's like, as an artist, like, you don't have to make it up or do it. Like, there are already grassroots organizing that's happening in all of these things. So how do we kind of connect with that? And how do you say, like, I don't have to be the voice of this because there's already people doing cool shit. Let's just kind of, like, integrate with that, and pushing forward kind of that collective that's going to push us towards liberation.
Yeah, and, you know, when you're speaking about community, I also feel like larger spaces of power have the responsibility to be accountable to their communities. So, you know, I have to mention that for me, it was deeply uncomfortable to see that Shell had a space here, not only as an activist, but, you know, as a space where people are meant to feel uplifted and safe. And, you know, I'm not going to go into it. All of this stuff's on the internet, but Shell has a long legacy of murdering indigenous people, of exploiting the people and the planet, of course, and greenwashing. And, you know, I've heard from some friends who happen to be in the audience that there was a lot of, you know, kind of blaming of individuals as opposed to taking responsibility. And so my sort of question, or rather my thought process more largely, is like, how do we create safe spaces and accountability in spaces like South by Southwest, where we're not inviting people who know exactly what they're doing, pulling the like wool over our eyes. You know, I've been in spaces with Shell before. I've been in a room with the CEO of Shell, and, you know, paraphrasing here, but he literally said, well, you use oil and gas, so how can you expect us to do the work? Or he would say things like, how can we fund the transition to renewable energies if you guys aren't buying our oil and gas? And I mean, that's like gaslighting 101, you know what I mean? And a friend of mine, Aisha Sadiqa, who founded something called Polluters Out, she made a really perfect analogy when we were in Edinburgh together. She said, you know, at WHO conferences, the tobacco industry was funding these things, and they had a say in health policy. So why are we allowing fossil fuel companies to have spaces in, you know, places that are very influential? And I think they went from being in climate spaces and now realizing that people in climate spaces don't want them, to going in spaces which are not as inherently climate related. And that's what they're doing here. And, you know, there are people in the audience from Shell who have been heckling climate activists and saying, asking them very provocative questions, derailing conversations. They're not our allies. They are not our allies. And don't for one second think that they have our intentions for the future of the planet at heart. They don't. And so, you know, that's what I have to say about South By. Be accountable to your community. Be accountable to your community. And don't let people who are trying to make this a profit game in this space.
I love that. Obviously. Yeah, I think that that's like, as we're building out this idea of what does it mean to take from artists and then bring it to an industry level, that's where we're, you know, when we're here and it's a panel of artists and activists, we have such a clear idea and like such clear goals. And I think that it's really important that we're keeping that at all levels as we're going up.
And I think it's really important, as with individual to individual level, but also industry level wise, that the focus is not just on the like the people on the floor, like what can you do as a single person, or what can you as a victim of something do, but actually put the focus on the people who are doing what they should not be doing, so that it will become more difficult for them to do it. So that if more people are like setting question marks at like big corporations or festivals or people who are representing stuff that we do not like, the more people will like be commenting in the comment section, just stuff like that, and pushing towards that change, it will make it more difficult for them to do it openly. And hopefully they will see that they have to make changes also. I know it's really difficult, but
my best piece of advice in that regard is, you know, see through the bullshit.
And to talk about that to your audience, if you discover something like that, talk about it. Speak up and just make other people see that too and be like, oh, I didn't know that. Because most of the time people are making choices based on what they don't know. And if you can let them know things, then it will be easier for them to make different choices.
Yeah, speaking truth to power, because what, like, folks in systems of a power of power, both as like from a corporate level, from a governmental level, they want folks to feel like we're powerless. But the people power is the strongest power that we have. And so as like artists and engaged communities, like, we can utilize that to push forward with change.
One little fun fact for y'all. The term carbon footprint was actually coined by BP Oil and Gas. as a way to deflect from their responsibility. So every time I hear the word carbon footprint, there's a little part of me that kind of shudders, because it's again this deflection from the biggest corporations who are the most responsible, who have the most amount of power, to making us feel A, powerless, and B, like it's our fault. So just keep your eyes open, have these conversations, and like turn on that part of your brain that goes, that's bullshit, I'm not buying that, and call it out.
And I think through what you said earlier, Ione, about the music being a tool to make people think for themselves is a really powerful thing, so that when they listen to your music, their thoughts start working and they're like, oh, wow, I'd never thought about it like that, which maybe makes them question other things down the line and be like, oh, maybe it's not what I thought it was. Maybe the world is different. Maybe I should question things more often. And that's so important.
I think it's also important to, you know, as artists and as people who might have audiences, believe that your audience is ready for these conversations. Because I think a lot of the time people make it seem like, you know, oh, no one wants to hear about this, or no one, you know, like, or, you know, even when you're creating a song and it's like, oh, well, you know, if I do this, I'll lose my audience. Like, believe that your audience is capable of coming along for the ride with you. And I think that, you know, a lot of the times as artists, we can kind of second guess what our communities want to hear. But the thing is that the people at the top know your audience will listen to you. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a reason why people, it's less profitable for certain people to say certain things. But it's like at the end of the day, if you know the power of a song, if you know that there's been a song in your life that you've heard that's pulled you out of your darkest day, or giving you strength to make it through, then you also know the power that you have to move your audience. And I think, like, whenever I find myself going down those trails of thought, I like to remember that I myself am a listener, and I am capable of understanding and believing and, you know, pursuing things with depth. So don't discount your audience, because the people who stand to profit from you doing that are not doing that.
I love that, and I love especially thinking about like how music has influenced each of our lives, how creativity, how art has changed us as people, and how that fuels kind of like how we go forward. So I think the last question I want to ask before we open up to Q&A is a little bit just kind of like, what are the sources of inspiration and hope that you're latching onto as you're pushing this forward? Because it is an uphill battle, and what keeps you going?
For me, I would say the youth. I think it was Asada Shakur said that, you know, you can tell about a community by the way that you treat the children. You know, and I think that for me, when I look to the future and I look to find inspiration, I like to think about the young people in this country and this world and the hope that they have. I remember how passionate I was when I was a kid, and I felt so eager to just stick it to the man and tell people, you know, what I thought it was. And it's like, I'm always fighting to like keep that little girl inside of me and keep that optimism and keep that belief that if I see it, it can be, you know? And so I think for me, like when I look forward and when I think about engaging with climate, it's like, in a lot of ways, I am thinking about the youth, because it's like beyond me, my children, you know, beyond me, their children. Like when I'm ready to start a family, I want to know that there's something for them here, you know, and that this deterioration of our environment and of morals and of values and things like that are things that can swing, you know, right back the other way. So I think the youth are the future, and I think that, you know, even in these conversations, we definitely need to center them and their opinions and their thoughts, because they have a lot to say.
What she said.
To spice things up a little bit, intergenerational collaboration is so important, because, you know, as much as I'm kind of slowly moving out of that category of youth as I get older, who would know? And the thing is, I've come to realize that there are a lot of people who go, oh, well, that's nice. The youth are going to take care of it. And the truth of the matter is we need all hands on deck. And so when I see cross-generational collaboration, coalition building between different movements, the recognition that we all have a role to play, that's what gives me hope. And, you know, I've been in organizing spaces where I've had, like, grandparents who have shown up for the climate. There have been like 16-year-olds who are like, I care about the planet. I'm here. We've had folks who are from, you know, different justice spaces going, I realize now that this is so relevant to my community. And when you see everyone come together and when they start to realize that they all have a role to play, that's what gives me hope. So yes, the youth, but also, you know, I can see some folks in the room who aren't youth. So we're watching and, you know, reach out to us and work together.
Amazing. So I think it's about time to open up to Q&As. If folks have any questions for anyone specifically or in general, we can field it out to folks. Yeah. Do we have a, do we know what we're doing for microphone stuff? I think there's a microphone over there.
Or just shout.
Or just shout really loudly.
Okay. I love to hear
I can only speak for myself. Personally, I try to balance the facts with like motivation and inspiration. And so I will definitely passionately post about wrongdoings or mountains of clothes in the desert in Chile and talk about that. But I will also post about people doing fantastic work that you can use and be a part of and show people alternatives to what they do in an inspirational way. We have a wave now in Norway going through with people making clothes from like fabrics that are leftover fabrics, and it's getting very, very, very popular, and it's a very nice way of balancing like, this is fun, this is a great alternative, and it's also a lot more sustainable than buying tons of clothes. And I find that people respond very well to that. And I also find that people respond very well to passion, not anger, but like passion about we have to change this. This is not the way it can be. And if people are going to be put off by it, then maybe in a while they won't be. Maybe they'll like come around at a certain point and see that, well, this is important to care about.
I think leading by example, and you know, we have to have hard conversations in this space, no doubt. But something that I've, and it's a personal journey, I've been trying to embrace more joy and rest in my practice, just because I feel like I want to make this a long-term thing. Sustainability isn't just about recycling and all of these things. I think it's a mindset, and to kind of like, you know, extrapolate from the words of the great Audre Lorde, that essentially self-preservation is not self-indulgence. You know, it's an act of resistance in this world that wants to see people be depressing and wants to see people burn out and, you know, be tired all the time. And so basically trying to foster those spaces and have those conversations with people I'm working with, whether in or outside of movements, folks who are kind of coming in and out of these spaces as well, is just to show folks that you can be joyful and you can still do this work, and that it comes from a huge place of love and care for people and the planet.
I think it's important to think about, you know, this idea of sustainability and how, you know, anger isn't always sustainable. But I personally like to create space for anger. I think as a Black woman, we get written off when we speak above a few decibels. And I'm cool with that personally, because I'm like, there's a lot to be angry about. There's a lot that's been taken from our communities. There's a lot to get up every day and to fight and to put a smile on your face to make other people more comfortable isn't always the way that I want to go. I don't mind being feared sometimes. I really don't. And I think like you have to honor the anger that people feel about the fact that they have lost everything. You know, there are communities that have been destroyed. There are things that people will never get back and will never see again. And that's not to indulge in a defeatist mindset, but anger is justified sometimes. And I think that we lose reality when we make people feel that if they're angry, they're not relatable, or that if they're angry, that they are not kind. You know, you can be the kindest human being alive and be pissed at what has been taken from us in this lifetime by colonization, by racism, by systemic racism for Black women in the medical industry. You know, like, there are so many things that just to get up every day and get through the day, you are forced to just violently deal with what it means to look a certain way or what it means to exist a certain way. And so I think that finding a way to create space for anger is actually super important to this movement, because it's not realistic, you know, to think that this is going to be a holding hands, a joyful, you know, we are going to trot into the sun to justice. You know, we're gonna have to fight for it, you know? And so I think that finding a way to create space for anger, but also finding a way to talk about what's sustainable. You know, you can't hold that anger forever, but if you can find an outlet for it, and if you can find spaces to go and to release that and to come back to the purpose and to come back to the mission, then you might make it there, you know? So I think that it's important, because sometimes I feel like certain communities get left out when anger is addressed, and just ways to deal with losing everything, which is not something that other people have to reckon with, you know? So anger, I feel, can be misunderstood sometimes, and I don't think it has to be as feared as it is sometimes.
Yeah, one of my favorite quotes is, take your anger and use it as compost for your garden, right? It's like that anger is the spark, and love is what keeps it burning.
Ooh, that's so good.
Look at me with the sound bites. any other questions we've got?
Thank you. This is kind of like maybe three questions, a little bit mixed up.
Okay.
So the first one is when you talked about we call it that term deflected debate. When you hear the coal flare giving away a tree, or part of the tree for everything that's sold, is that genuine coal flare, or is that we call behind coming up with the idea to get into the game? Second point is live music. Right, so I've been putting on gigs, and the Christian music MC this week. Like, you cannot get away with the fact that we've flown all these people over, that's bad. To see the incredible emotional connection that the artists need, the fans need, and it's the biggest revenue. Is that going to be the biggest kickback from artists to the whole movement? The third bit is the solution, like South by have said, where is the solution in metaverse?
So to answer your question about Coldplay, I would say it's a bit of both. You know, it's trendy at the moment to talk about sustainability, and no doubt there are, you know, niches to be filled with a lot of musicians, big musicians taking up the space. But, you know, before I worked in sort of the organizing climate activist space, I actually worked in the wildlife filmmaking industry, which is based in the UK, and this is a huge aspect of their concern as well. You know, we're flying all of these people out to go film these wild animals. And the thing that I've come to realize in this industry, because my partner also works in this industry as a cameraman, is that there is more work to be done in integrating local communities in the process. So as much as I know that a lot of artists have their crews and they have very intimate relationships with them, I want to start seeing this kind of like cross-community cultural hub of folks who are based in certain cities who can tap in to help specific artists with stuff instead of having to fly all these crews around. That's one thing that I think could be explored. The other thing is, you know, touring is a huge part of people's revenue and their income. I don't personally see that going away. But what I will say is that there are plenty of people doing very cool, innovative stuff to try and make those gigs more sustainable. I mean, I remember reading about Coldplay and the floors that generated the electricity for the concert, and I thought that was really cool. Yeah. Like, why don't we do that everywhere? And what we need is for people to go, oh, okay, that's a great idea. I'm going to put money towards it so that it can be accessible for everyone. So it shouldn't just be Coldplay who can afford to do those things.
I think also we are very used to indulgence in this world. We're used to Like, there is merch to be made. There's like, we're going to fly, we're going to stay at these hotels and at festivals. We need these and these and these things. And I think at a certain point, we need to like shave away what doesn't need to be there. There doesn't need to be like a super long table with like merch for South by Southwest, if I'm allowed to say it, with like 10 different t-shirts, and like they might have been made sustainably, I don't know. But all of these things make events less sustainable, and if you go and do them all the time, or if you fly wherever you're going and you're flying all the time when you don't necessarily need to, that doesn't mean that that's like you have to stop flying. Or you have to stop going to festivals, or you have to stop making merch. It just means you can be smarter about how you do it. You can look into alternatives. You can be like, hey, could we do something else than just like doing what we've always done? Can we, like you say, are there local producers? Are there people who can come in from like in the city that we are and actually do what we're hiring somebody else to do and flying in? And I think that way I would feel better about going to a place like this, being like, that's going to be the one like big thing that I'm going to do, and I know that they're thinking about these things. They are, they have the same mindset as me, and that way, if people all over the planet would do that, that would make a huge impact. Mm-hmm. It really would.
And that's one of the initiatives of Climate Control Projects, is really like making a hub for researching and developing ways that every aspect of touring can be more sustainable. Because I think a lot of people are talking about it and are like, oh shoot, like I wish we could do all these things, but what does it mean to actually put your money where your mouth is and invest in it and think about from every level, from like the food we're serving at concessions to travel to like stadiums, to like everything. That that you know, we don't have to operate the same way we always have, and I think that kind of like we can envision a better way to do this, because I agree that like music and connection is important, but we can do it better.
And money would also be distributed more equally within a community, and would give more power to more people in the community if more people are brought in to do things that you normally would like hire just a certain person to do or a certain group of people to do. And I think that just like speaks to sustainability in so many aspects of making a thing like this happen.
Also, just want to say with merch, something that we do in organizing spaces is we screen print. People take their own t-shirts and yep. stuff, and they jazz them up. And why do we need to make more clothing, right? Yeah. We can just use what we already have, get creative with what we already have. And yes, you know, there needs to be innovation, but sometimes we don't need to reinvent the wheel. Sometimes all you have to do is like kind of look back to how things were in the past and try to scale things down in that way.
And also things that we don't think about, which can be easy to use alternatives, just like for backdrops and like actual material that you use. It's very easy when you're ordering stuff from people who make things like that to ask, do you have something that does not contain like material that's harmful to nature? And they'll give you just like, yep, we have these. Okay, great. I'll choose those over these ones. Or you can ask in the same email that you send, like, who makes these? Are they paid a fair wage? And they can either give you an answer or they can't, but a lot of the time they can, and if they can't, then maybe that's not who you order from. Right. And that's like, it's a pretty simple thing to do, and it makes a difference, because people have made, like these are made at factories, and right. yeah.
The other thing that I wanted to kind of finish before I kind of wrap up my sort of spiel, I work with Brian Eno on an initiative called Earth Percent. I don't know if you've heard, yeah. I mean, you know, the music industry is a multi-billion dollar industry, and I'm just going to say it up front, some of these celebrities and big acts, they have too much money, you know? Put that money somewhere else. And something like Earth Percent and what the music industry is trying to do is divert money into climate justice initiatives back to local communities. And that's essentially why Brian started the initiative, because he was like, we're not doing enough. This is one very simple way that we can do stuff. So, yeah.
I'm not into it. I'm gonna just be real. The metaverse.
It's about the metaverse. I was like,
I feel like we have enough things to fix here before we start going into alternate universes. And I also feel like the cost to entry or the barrier to entry, it's still not accessible. You know what I mean? Like, coming from a place like Jakarta, a lot of people don't have laptops. A lot of people might not have a cell phone. So it's like, when I think about stuff like that, I know where I grew up, and I know that the barrier to entry to join this metaverse, I'm gonna focus on this universe for now. No shade to anybody who doesn't want to. But just for me, I'm not interested.
I also think it's just like there are different genres that have different types of cultures connected to them. I bet there are people who would love to take part in the music community who maybe don't have physical, like the ability to actually go out and do stuff, or they don't have like the means to do that. And so that would be a great way for them to partake. But I think it's important to have like both mindsets when you work with that, just to make sure that you make it as accessible as you can. And yeah, but it's an interesting thing. And also, we're not going to talk about that, but processing power is like a huge thing. So that's also a thing that we should think about.
Yeah. I also just don't really like Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, I have my reasons. Many of us do, but I'm just so skeptical a lot of the time. Don't get me wrong, accessibility is so important, and I'd love to see people who are in that realm, if they're going to be doing it more equitably and making it more accessible and finding ways to run it on renewable, because I cannot imagine how much energy that is going to take. But, you know, there are so many corporations who want to recreate the way that we communicate with one another whilst exploiting our data, whilst exploiting sort of the views that we have. With those foundations alone, I'm always very skeptical. So I'm gonna keep it at that.
Other questions we have? Oh, okay, do we have to wrap it up? Okay, any final questions before we wrap it up? Yes?
I really appreciate where you're coming from on this no need for perfection, but be accountable. What do we say with our fellow climate activists who put the zero waste to zero emissions goals out there all the time?
Yeah, sure. So I'm in a lot of spaces with folks who literally will walk into spaces with other politicians and decision makers going, that's not good enough, and this constant anger. And the thing is, it's not entirely my place to tell them what to feel and what not to feel. I just know that I'm in a position in my journey now where I see the nuance, and I want to strive for something as opposed to nothing at all. And so trying to lead by example and kind of being like, okay, yes, we need to have this sort of standard that we want to aim for, but you know, a lot of people won't agree with me in this. I do think compromise is something that needs to be discussed more, because otherwise you're going to walk away from these spaces feeling completely defeated, feeling like nothing is going to be done. And you know, trying to create space for that is quite important to me, because I found in my experience of demanding quote-unquote too much, even though I don't believe anything is too much, genuinely, sometimes it's better to walk away with something and know that you can chip away at that, and then hopefully things will get better with time. But yeah, you know, to the folks who are like that, I encourage them not to change. I think we need people like that. But I also feel like it's my role or my place in the journey that I'm at now to try and find something that I can walk away with, to know that there is something that we can strive towards and that we can work towards.
And also, I think that like part of this is like this extending of an invitation to not be perfect, to all of this is like for individuals, for our communities, for fellow activists, for the folks that we want to engage with. And it's not necessarily to make like corporate leaders feel comfortable, and it's not to make politicians feel like they can, you know, just be like, oh shoot, you know. Yeah. And so this kind of like bad activist ethos is is extended to like our fellow comrades, and that's where we want it to be. And like, we will still be brutally honest and demand everything from people who hold power.
Something that I've noticed with COVID as well is the rapid response of the government with COVID. Okay, not perfect, don't get me wrong, that, you know, in the UK they have put a lot of vulnerable communities at risk, and we cannot undermine that. But to see how urgently they tackled that, I'm like, you can do that with the climate. There is no excuse.
Live in the United States. Huh? Except for if you live in the United States, where I wouldn't say rapid is the way to...
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see the amount of stuff that people roll out, whether it's consumer goods or how they respond to things that are going to harm their profits. We need that energy for the climate crisis. And, you know, when I'm talking about the activists and them kind of pushing for net zero and stuff... It's not my place to kind of, you know, expect something of activists and change their theory of change. I just believe everyone's different. But for organizations, you can bet I'm going to go in guns blazing, just being like, this needs to change now. Because they have the power and they have the money and the resources. So, you know, corporations I'm not as lenient with.
Okay, I think we've run over our time anyways. Thank you so much to our amazing panelists. It's been such an honor to be here. And thank you to everyone for hanging out.